Radio Kingston, 1490 WKNY. Good afternoon. I'm Jimmy Buff, and it's Peter Buffett. Peter, we began the Surviving the Future book club in September, early September.
All right.
We are now approaching the last of the three chapters, actually two chapters and an epilogue.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been, I just want to say thank you so much for participating over these months.
Thanks for the great idea. How could I say no? This is excellent.
Yeah. And it's just been a, as you noted last week, you could have read the book faster, indeed.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's mostly so people at home can realize that, oh, if they want to pick up the book themselves, they can probably get through it in a weekend or so.
And I was going to say, but if you do that, you don't get us.
That's right.
You don't get us.
That's right. And all of our commentary before and after.
Indeed. chapter 15, a short one called Transition, which is, just seems to be the place where we're at.
That's for sure. How long it'll take, who knows? But, yep, that's where we are.
All right. Take it away, Sean Chamberlain.
Chapter 15, Transition. One expression of the called for evolution to local self-reliance is the Transition Movement, which was founded in Totnes, Devon, in 2006, and which over 300 communities around the world have joined to date. Editor's note: the late author wrote this content before his death in 2010. The growth of Transition has since continued apace. As of 2018, there are now thousands of Transition communities spread over more than 50 countries. The movement is part of a convergence of thinking towards the principle that, if areas and communities are to be prepared for the shocks of the climacteric, it will not be government and regulatory agencies that do it. It will be something they do for themselves. Transition, lean thinking, and others are, from their different starting points, pointing towards the same critical principle of presence. Transition's pioneers are starting on the long and maybe impossible road towards what the catastrophe experts know and recommend as deconcentration, building local competence and self-reliance, implicitly recognizing, as the analyst Charles Perrow describes it, the inevitable failure of organizations, public and private, to protect us from disasters, and the need for minimizing the scale of our vulnerable targets. And Transition's members are getting to know each other. The importance of this, so obvious that it has been overlooked, is beginning to be recognized. Conversation often comes empty-handed, but sometimes, crucially, it is the bearer of good judgment, raising the collective IQ by, who knows, 20 points? Studies of what it means have begun at Johns Hopkins University in Maryland. The summary of their findings is dry. People who don't know one another's names don't work together nearly as well as those who do. When nurses were given a chance to say their names and mention concerns at the beginning of a case, they were more likely to note problems and offer solutions. The researchers called it an activation phenomenon. Giving people a chance to say something at the start seemed to activate their sense of participation and responsibility. Do nothing that matters without consulting a conversation. It is one of the arts in its own right, the hot center of culture. Transition is a more profound idea than it is sometimes taken to be. Several local groups that consider themselves to be part of the transition movement have chosen to forego the usual Transition Town X moniker and instead call themselves Sustainable X. But it is not, in its essence, about the familiar protocols of environmental protection and sustainability. On the contrary, the change of direction represented by the transition movement is as profound as any intentional change experienced by a civilization. The starting point is seeing governments promising to care for the people, relying on the money raised by taxation in the formal economy, but becoming less and less able to fulfill this promise, as infrastructures and control systems become more elaborate, and the income flows provided by the economy fall. Transition's response is that the people make no promises, but incrementally work out how to care for themselves and each other, relying on informal reciprocities and on the efficiency dividend that becomes available at the small scale, from a retreating infrastructure and advancing elegance. Now, the transition movement is what its members worldwide think it is. Surviving the Future's slant on the matter interprets it as more or less indistinguishable from a pathway to the lean economy. And if transitioners disagree with this and argue that the movement is, for instance, about building resilient local responses to peak oil and climate change and setting an example of how to cut the carbon, there is no reason to disagree with that. There is the reality of distributed ownership here. Transition or sustainable towns that are doing dazzling things in a practical way have an authority which Surviving the Future, which only writes and talks about them, cannot claim. And yet, there is a convergence. The brewing industry, for instance, is well advanced in its wonderful transition. From a locked-in structure of giant authoritarian brewers with marketing budgets, to space for independent local brewers with talent and passion. Organic growers and farmers' markets are decentralising food production and building on local experiment widely shared. Some governments even are beginning to get it, though they have the same disadvantage as company managements that suddenly announce that from now on, workers are going to be allowed to think for themselves. Not everyone believes them or knows what they are talking about, and they may not themselves have quite understood what they are saying. There are hard times ahead for centralised authorities. The lean economies that succeed will do so because they make use of local diversity, the distinctive challenges and troubles, the skills and insights, the airs and graces of particular places and times. Reports of a decline in diversity are therefore not merely matters of sentimental regret. They tell us something about the system's health and expectation of life. Here is John Stuart Mill, lamenting this decline in the United Kingdom in the 1850s, and inviting reflection on why that matters. Diversity, he writes, is everyday diminishing. Formerly, different ranks, different neighbourhoods, different trades and professions lived in what might be called different worlds. At present, to a great degree, in the same. Comparatively speaking, they now read the same things, listen to the same things, see the same things, go to the same places, have their hopes and fears directed to the same objects, have the same rights and liberties and the same means of asserting them. And the assimilation is still proceeding. The increase of commerce and manufacture promotes it. A more powerful agency than even all these in bringing about a general similarity among mankind is the complete establishment, in this and other free societies, of the ascendancy of public opinion in the state, so that there ceases to be any social support for non-conformity. The demand that all other people shall resemble ourselves grows by what it feeds on. If resistance waits till life is reduced nearly to one uniform type, all deviations from that type will come to be considered impious, immoral, even monstrous and contrary to nature. If the increase of commerce and manufacture promotes uniformity, their coming decrease will demote it. Localities will develop solutions adapted to their particular circumstances and places, going their separate ways, some of which may, as Mill puts it, be considered impious, immoral, even monstrous and contrary to nature. Kirkpatrick Sale agrees. Local communities of the future will create their own political systems according to their own environmental settings and their own ecological needs, and there is no reason to think they would necessarily be compatible, or even, from someone else's point of view, good. Given a chance, local economies work out their own solutions. The surge in creativity and small-scale enterprise following the disaster of the collapse in grain prices in the last two decades of the 19th century is one example of small farmers and horticulturalists, under pressure, using their nous in diverse ways. The agricultural historian Joan Thirsk writes, "Innovative activities under a regime of alternative agriculture were branching out in a multitude of different directions, but most were modest, local efforts, which only the assiduous seeker in out-of-the-way places was likely to uncover. The statisticians were the very last to become aware of them and give them regular attention." And she summarises, "The economic strategies of smallholders were bewilderingly diverse. They might well exasperate politicians seeking truths that could be expressed in a few crisp generalities. Nonetheless, The tide is flowing. The direction is being mapped very simply in those small-scale holons within the wheel of life. Localization stands, at best, at the limits of practical possibility. But it has the decisive argument in its favor that there will be no alternative. We do not need to agree on which particular straw it will be that breaks the camel's back, but there is little to disagree with in the observation that the complex, centralized, energy-intensive, materials-intensive, money-intensive, taught, infrastructure-heavy, feedback-blind model of society and economy on which we rely is in trouble from many directions. The transition network of wide-awake, small-scale responses is one of the bastions of recovery elastic resilience towards which talent and passion are being drawn.
That's chapter 15 of the book Surviving the Future, called Transition. A remarkable chapter in its brevity.
Right. And clarity.
And clarity and yeah. impact. And really one that is, again, so timely because in recent months, I've reengaged with the Kingston, New York Transition Group.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Yep.
And every other Thursday, actually, David McCarthy from that group joins us on the show to highlight some aspect of transition that's happening locally. The Repair Cafe is probably the highlight of that.
Yep.
But there are transition groups in Woodstock. Mm-hmm. And there are transition groups in Marbletown. In fact, the Woodstock, one of the people from the transition Woodstock group is going to join David on Thursday afternoon to talk about some of the things they're doing.
Fantastic.
And, you know, I remember when I read this chapter for the first time, that line about localization, and it has in its decisive favor the argument that there will be no alternative.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And clearly, people are... you know, they see that coming. They're forming these groups in these towns, and you know, the value of that, of course, is first of all, it's happening, but that people need examples. People need permission, you know, to think this way, because it's scary and you don't want to leap alone, even though we're all going to get pushed if we don't leap. And, you know, turning the jump into a dive is, I think, kind of what we're talking about here. And so having people that understand it and are leading the way, we need people at the tip of the arrow.
Yeah. And there are and there's evidence of that in Kingston in a lot of different ways and things that sort of started what we would maybe term organic.
Yeah,
Have grown. O Positive comes to mind. You know, it started as this you know, one little nugget of, hey, we're going to do this on a weekend in October, and it's grown to what it is.
Yeah, Well, and I was struck by him talking about writing about the kind of homogeneity, the assimilation. You know, all these things where we all know it. You go to any town, and you can find the Starbucks, and you can find these. Various, everything starts to look like everything else. And like you're saying about these small things like O Positive that start small and grow, the answer to that homogeneity is diversity, certainly, but this idea of homegrown, you know. And what does, when you say homegrown, what does it mean? It means unique, trusted, probably healthy, probably, you know, true to its roots in many ways. And that can apply to anything, food, obviously, but also these small efforts that turn into critical pieces of what's next.
Yeah. Dar Williams put out a book last year called, I think, 1,000 Towns about her travels as a musician. And there's a town in Pennsylvania where the film The Blob was made in the 1950s. And this town in recent years had been struggling. And someone had the idea of creating Blobfest.
Oh, my God.
Where they screen the movie. And it has transitioned that town into a thing that the entire town participates in every year. And it brings people from outside in
Incredible.
To experience. There's aspects of carnival involved. Yep. And so the idea that transition is specific to a specific area and that there is no particular model for
it. No, you're reminding me that when I was in college, I went to the Calaveras County Frog Jumping Contest, which, of course, is this huge thing, and it's about jumping frogs, but who's going to get where first?
How many did you jump?
Yeah, right.
Oh, frogs actually.
Yeah, the frogs jump. Yeah, yeah.
We have the current in our area as well, which is another aspect of perhaps a transition type idea.
Yep.
It's a local it's a local currency that's
right.
coming.
Right.
And I particularly love the phrase dazzling things in a practical way.
Yeah.
That
right.
they use in this chapter.
Right. Yep. And all these things, you know, people obviously, this is what's sold by our politicians is, you know, elect me and things will happen, right? But if you look back in time around any shift, it's decades, hundreds of years, thousands of years long. So we have to start. And a friend of mine and I were talking recently and we thought, you know, 500 years from now, they're going to look back and call this, you know, like we have the age of reason and the age of this and the age of that. It'll be the age of intervention. It'll be the time when we said, no, we. It's not about laws and regulations. It's about humans saying that this is not human. We have to change this and we have to start now.
It's the Tuesday afternoon Surviving the Future Book Club, wrapping up chapter 14 called Transition. We will reconvene next Tuesday. Oh, I'm sorry. That's chapter 15.
Oh, got it. Okay. You could have told me anything. I would have believed you.
We will reconvene next Tuesday for the final chapter before the epilogue. And next week, it's chapter 16 titled Ethics and Ecology.
Looking forward to it.
And if you're interested in meeting up with the Kingston, New York Transition Group, they meet the first Thursday of the month, which will be a week from this Thursday, at Outdated in Uptown Kingston at 9 a.m. for a transition, Kingston, New York Transition breakfast. And I highly recommend attending. I'll be there a week from Thursday morning, and maybe you will be too. And don't forget, we have Transition Radio this Thursday at 3:30 with David McCarthy of the Kingston Group and Polly Howells from the Woodstock Transition Group.